Renegade Broadcasting, hard-hitting talk radio.
Is coming. Our storm. And when it arrives, it will shake the universe.
Welcome to the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you February 17th, 2019. Thank you so much for tuning in to RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Please go on over to RenegadeTribune.com and also go on over, treat yourself, make some purchases at HeathenHerbs.com. I want to briefly just go over what's happening in the world before getting into the main content for tonight, which I find much more interesting. So guys, the main headline today I saw on Drudge was about this Empire actor, Jussie Smollett, who faked a hate crime against himself. Yeah, it's an interesting story. The guy paid a couple of Africans to throw some diluted bleach on him and put a noose around his neck. And after he came out with his story about a couple of white men beating him up and saying it's MAGA country, you had this absolute uproar by the media, the different talking heads. This is 2019 in America. It's just so awful. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and it turns out he faked it. Now, this isn't, I mean, he hasn't been convicted of anything, but I guess he could face up to 3 years for giving false testimony like that. Absolutely ridiculous. But I do feel like this big story, even though it is something that our people could point to and say, look at the anti-white bias, look at all these people who fake hate crimes, there are bigger, more important stories that are not getting covered. What the United States is doing to instigate war with Venezuela, and also, at the same time, Iran. Look at Mike Pence over there with Bibi Netanyahu in Poland, trying to guilt-trip the Poles for the Holocaust, and also advocating for war with Iran, saying, basically, Iran is the new Nazi Germany. They're trying to Holocaust the Jews. We gotta stop them. Now, back here in America, as I discussed last night on the roundtable for only 1 hour, we have Trump and the rest of Congress all getting together to unanimously say, we love you, Jews. And Jews love them right back for all they've done. Now, it's absolutely absurd. They are waging war now. Officially, essentially what they're doing is making it legal for them to wage war on anti-Semites, so-called anti-Semites, whoever fits their definition, around the world, at home and abroad. Yes, this is, oh, supposed to be intimidating, frightening. Oh, the thought police are going to come knock down my door, your door, and shoot us. Well, they very well may. I don't know. Is that what's going to happen? Do they want to bring it to that level? Do they want to make me, you, and others martyrs? Is that what they want to do? I don't think so. Yeah, sure. They could be trying to shut us down. They've shut us down in a number of different ways. Shut down our PayPals, our Stripes, our Patreons, our GoFundMes, our Indiegogo's. Yeah, they shut us down. They're going to try to shut us down even further. On YouTube, they've shut us down. They've shut us down on Twitter. They've shut us down on Facebook. I don't even try with Facebook anymore. That's long gone. Yeah, they've shut us down, shut us out, but we're still going strong, and they are not happy about the effect that people like us have had. Raising the consciousness of the people of the world about the very evil nature of Jewish supremacy, the dire threat that Jewish supremacy poses. So they want to outlaw all. They are outlawing all criticism of Jews, of Zionism. So what I want to do is stop criticizing Jews, okay? I don't want to get thrown in the Jew log. I do not want to be persecuted. So I'm going to have a new policy here on the network that you must love the Jews. You must trust the Jews. And you must thank the Jews for all that they have done. Love the Jews. Trust the Jews. Thank the Jews. That would be a great propaganda poster, people. It's, I guess it would fall under the term black propaganda, because it would seem like perhaps it's coming from the other side. Maybe it's more gray propaganda. I don't know, but it's great propaganda. Love the Jews. Trust the Jews. Thank the Jews. They deserve it. They deserve it. It's absolutely ridiculous what is going on. Trump is just, whoa, he's gone all in. He's gone all in against anti-Semites. It's a ridiculous time to be alive. It does look like they would like to have another kind of Bolshevik revolution. See, the thing is, they're still in power. How do they have a revolution? Well, what I mean is they want the bloodiness of the original Bolshevik revolution to come back. I don't think they're going to get it. They're trying really hard. Who knows? Maybe they'll use their control of the telecommunications industry, like they show in the movie Kingsman, to just make people slaughter each other because their social engineering wasn't working as well as they wanted. Or maybe they'll just introduce this World War III, kicking it off with Venezuela, Iran, etc. They've been pushing this for quite some time. We'll see how much it escalates. There's already a whole lot of death, destruction going on at the hands of the United States of America. So to pretend like we're not already in war is, of course, erroneous. Oh, we don't want the country to go to war. Hey, we're still in war. We've been at war for a long time. And now they're just going to war with anti-Semites so that Jews can feel safe and protected around the world. But we can't criticize them for this, because we must love the Jews. We must love them. Protect them. Thank them. Hail them. Hail the Jews. The chosen people. That would be good. Oh, I'm just imagining a whole propaganda poster line. Hail the Jews. Hail the chosen ones. Trust the Jews. The Jews are watching. They are watching. They're watching over all of us. Who is watching the watchmen? I am. You are. Okay, so I don't really want to get too much more into current events here tonight. Just wanted to cover some of that, the dire threat we're facing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter if they do come kick in your door, take you out. The ripple effect would not go their way. And yes, it does matter. But what I'm trying to get at is, well, to segue to the topic I have here for tonight. Or topics, pretty much reincarnation and immortality. And I think that one of the reasons people are not more dedicated to our cause, or that they don't even care much about the future in general, is that they have this Abrahamic worldview where YOLO, Y-O-L-O, you only live once. That is, with just a few small exceptions with different sects within the three main Abrahamic religions, that is the main doctrine of the main religious institutions of this world, which are the big power players. They're the Abrahamics, the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims. All of them say that reincarnation is a bunch of pagan bogus. All of them have stamped out the traces of Aryan ideas about the afterlife. Sure, they allow it for it to continue in Hinduism, because it's brown people over there. But white people, Aryans, if you will, have a long tradition of reincarnation and various forms of immortality. And not necessarily, you know, just an afterlife. You know, because I actually think that the whole Valhalla idea is pretty, it could be a latecomer. It could have been actually inspired by Christianity and the idea of heaven, rather than vice versa. Maybe heaven was inspired by Valhalla. But I see them acting in a similar way in some instances. And they push the idea of Valhalla within the controlled heathen realms much more than they push, let's say, Celtic ideas of reincarnation and the afterlife. And I think it's for a reason. I do not think YOLO. I think that reincarnation is real. I think we only live forever. Wolf. W-O-L-F. Wolf. We only live forever. And knowing this, knowing that this is not going to be our only time here, makes us want to strive even that much harder for a better future. Now, I think you should want to strive for a better future simply because, well, you care about people, you care about your family line, you want them to be well off. But I think that people are sometimes just a little bit too selfish. And they think, hey, YOLO, it doesn't matter that the world's going to hell in a handbasket. Because, you know, I'm enjoying myself and I'll die before it gets really bad. I'll die before, you know, the Hellstorm 2.0 happens. So I'm on my way out, don't worry about it. No, that cannot be our mindset. Cannot be our mindset at all. And I think that the atheistic kind of nihilism that pervades, and the scientism, there's a good article on scientism recently over at Renegade Tribune, check that out. I think that the pervasiveness of this turns people into absolute cowards. They become very hedonistic, and they don't think much about doing anything that's righteous. I think it might even be more destructive than the Christian idea of heaven, where you're rewarded for doing good deeds here on the earth. The problem is that the good deeds that they're doing are actually what has resulted in white genocide. The building of the kingdom of heaven here on earth is essentially a Jewish supremacist white genocide plot, but I do think that having people doing what they think is right and good and godly is, it's still better than people who just have no desire to do good. They think that there's no reason for them to have righteous actions here in this world, to be heroic. I want to foster a heroic ideal in our people. I want our people to think about the future as something that they are directly connected to. You'll be coming back here. Do you want to live as a slave? You want to be reborn, perhaps, in one of your descendants as a slave to Jewish supremacy or to one of their proxies? Probably just to Jewish supremacists, that would be the end time scenario. They need a lot of slaves to get up to that 2,800 per Jew. Do you want your... So if it's not bad enough to have your descendants be Jewish slaves. If that doesn't inspire you enough, do you want to be one? Because that's where we're headed. I also think that this, the religion of Christianity, the religion of Islam and Judaism, they're so anti-nature that people don't give a damn about clear-cutting huge tracts of land. They don't care at all about the suffering of animals. Because, hey, you know, they don't have souls. Yahweh, Allah, God, did not imbue them with souls. He gave us souls, and that gives us the right to devour as many of them as we want. We don't need to have any kind of restraint or even thank them for their lives, the sustenance that they are giving us. No, we need to thank Yahweh, sit down and pray, and thank Yahweh for the blessings he has provided. Let's go to some chicken wing eating contest at the church. Let's go do that. Unless you're a Seventh-day Adventist, and then you're going to live a lot longer because they're primarily vegetarian. They're definitely vegetarian, which means some of them are also vegans. And those ones live even longer. But no, whoa, hey Kyle, you're pushing the NWO diet, don't you know? I've listened to Sfarage. Absolute BS. Hey, you know what? I listened to our ancestors. Go back and actually look at what a lot of Aryans, thousands of years ago, were into. The article on Hyperborean frugivores on Renegade Tribune is a good resource just to start scratching the surface. But you look at just how some of the greatest athletes and minds have been performing recently, and you realize that there's something to it. There's something spiritual to this diet as well, where you get away from animal products. There's something energetic to it. Hey, maybe you don't have as much karmic debt, since we're speaking in the ancient Aryan terms. We're talking about reincarnation. And hey, so if some of their ideas of reincarnation are correct, when you're eating that pig over there, you might even be eating one of your relatives. You might be eating one of your cousins, you know, because some of your relatives might have not led such enlightened lives and have been born again as an animal, if you get what I'm saying. All right, so let's go and do this. Let's take a look at the Hindu belief of reincarnation. This is just a brief overview. A look into the belief of the reincarnation of the soul according to Hinduism by Alana Kettler. This is a short one I posted last year. The belief of reincarnation has seemingly become a lot more popular in recent years. Perhaps as more and more people are stepping away from a mainstream version of religion, they are adopting a more open perception when it comes to the soul and what happens to it once the body dies. Along with stepping away from religion, it seems that many New Agers are adopting a belief system that the soul is here to learn, grow, and evolve, and that all souls are actually part of one consciousness that some call God, the universe, source, or all that is. I don't like that part. I think a lot of that is poison. Whatever you call it, many are resonating with this idea and often acknowledging reincarnation that is also a widespread belief of those who follow the Hindu religion. So what exactly is this belief? Let's have a look at what Hinduism teaches about reincarnation. According to Hinduism, a soul will reincarnate again and again on Earth until it has learned all its lessons, evolved, and then reunites with Source. During this process, the soul will enter into many bodies, being born again and again and dying again and again, assuming many different forms until it has learned all of the lessons it set out to learn. This concept is summarized in the following verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Just as a man discards worn-out clothes and puts on new clothes, the soul discards worn-out bodies and wears new ones. So, I don't think it's only about living lessons here. I think it's about winning. It is about conquering our enemies, waging the eternal battle, and winning our future. Turning the direction of creating hell on earth. No, I don't want to use even the Christian terminology. We need to stop this downward decline and bring this world onto an upward path. I understand why people say that the Demiurge rules over this world, and he very well may, but I do not think he created it, and I do not think that this world, this reality, is inherently evil. I can see such potential in it, and I want to make it better, to strive towards perfection, not in some kind of OCD way, but to enable the beauty of the world to shine forth in all of its glory, helping it. Trees, flowers. These are some of our real resources, our real wealth. Really, truly. You just look at how a person is able to thrive and grow when in a forested area as compared to the cancerous environment of the city where they will literally get cancer so far away from the natural world, not stepping bare feet onto soil. We need to straighten out our priorities and our ideas about what a good life really is. Okay, so, continuing. According to Hinduism, a soul has to live many different lifetimes and undergo a substantial amount of various experiences before it attains perfection and becomes one with the divine, or source, or God, or whatever it is that you feel comfortable calling it. The Hindu theory of creation begins when the individual souls became separated from the One. It then continues as the evolution of life and consciousness and gradually progresses on Earth in phases. During this process, some souls will return to Source through the transformation of matter, also known as Prakriti, in which they remain hidden and bound. The rest of the souls continue on their journey and return to God in the end. She's using Judeo-Christian terms here. Not through the same transformation, but through the great destruction that happens at the end of each time cycle. The belief is that this great cycle of creation, which stretches over millions of years, will then come to its end. I'm going to correct myself. God is actually not really a Judeo-Christian term. It looks like they stole that one as well. When the cycle begins, each soul is drawn and bound to a false personality, which is known as Jiva, loosely translated to living being. This Jiva, or Jiva, standing for all living forms, by the way, not just humans, it's also known as the embodied self, or the elemental self. It has an inner subtle body and an outer gross body. The soul remains encased within the subtle body, which is also known as the Linga Sarira. This body is made up of the subtle sense, the subtle mind, breath, ego, and our intelligence. The gross body is made up of the animal mind, the elemental body, and its organs. This is a physical aspect of the mind-body computer. Each jiva has an ego sense which arises from perceptions, knowledge, memories, desires, or attachments, and the feeling of diversity and separation. This is all part of the grand plan. Because of this ego sense of awareness, the jiva remains unaware of its true identity and experiences a form of delusion, duality, attraction, and aversion to the opposing pairs like heat and cold or pain and pleasure. The jiva acts as though they are different and separate from the rest of all creation. This is what offers our souls the lessons that we need in order to grow and evolve. Egoism causes the desire-ridden actions and selfishness, and the souls end up suffering because of it. I don't hate on the ego like some people do. I think the ego is actually important in a healthy, natural state. I think we need the ego. The ego is like the egg, the ego, that surrounds us and keeps us separated from all that is. I don't think that we need to crack our shell open completely and join in with the One. No. I don't want to be scrambled eggs with all these other people. The body is essentially a prison, and the soul is held within it as the prisoner. This is actually seen in a lot of symbolism with the bird in the bird cage. Your rib cage is the bird cage. You'll see that if you look for it. When the body dies, the physical body and the gross mind return to the earth, but the subtle body survives and then accompanies the soul to the next lifetime. That seems to make sense to me, at least. Is there more to this? Of course, there's a lot more to the belief system and many more layers and levels in the scripture about this whole process of life and death, birth and rebirth. What is interesting is that we are starting to hear more and more stories of children who actually vividly remember their past lives. Some accounts are so clear and detailed with information that they simply could not have known otherwise, which is causing many non-believers to at least question the theory of reincarnation. Surely there must be something to this. So you can read all about that, watch some documentaries on it. They've documented a lot of crazy cases. Mainly in the parts of the world where people actually believe in reincarnation, of children being born in a very young age, remembering how their former self died, and then they check the records, and this person's correct, or similar stories, knowing things that they just could not know otherwise. Nobody feeding them this information over there in some slum of India about their past life somewhere else. Okay, so we're going to a break here in just a little bit. Then I'll get to my thoughts on reincarnation. They differ a little bit from what I was just reading. You don't need to just turn to the extant Hindu text to find out what reincarnation is. Start thinking about it yourself. And I'm not saying you have to believe in it. I'm not saying I fully believe in it, but I think it is I think it makes sense. I think there's a logic to it, and I think that it is very utilitarian as well. I think it will get us where we need to be. When our people think that they have a future here, that they will be here for a long, long time to come. Wolf. We need the wolf pack. We only live forever, or we ought to live forever. Okay, we'll discuss more of this on the other side.
I've always believed that Britain is a country of migrants. I'm Jewish. Some of my family came in the late 19th century. I'm Sephardi on my mother's side.
The Liberal Democrats will always stand up for a Britain that is open, tolerant and diverse. And in that spirit, I very much welcome the Jewish European Election Manifesto, calling for a strengthening of EU hate crime legislation. As a party, we wholeheartedly value the relationship we have with the Jewish community, both in Britain and internationally.
Something dark in a hall of stone, something bright like a diamond shone. Mist and magic fill the air, from wedding feast to devil's lair. Suddenly the walls ran red, kith and kin all lying dead, none to follow, none to chase, fear and pain.
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. This is Kyle Hunt, and I'm talking about reincarnation. I said I'd get to my own views on reincarnation, and I will. And I will, because I do think it is a great source of strength for our people, if we are to embrace it, and it will help us to take back our destiny. And I know a lot of people just dismiss the idea right out of hand. They think it's just silly, it's nonsensical. When I think it makes perfect sense, and some of the most brilliant people in the past have thought so as well. So that's what I'm going to cover first, is the amount of people, the very intelligent minds, who have talked about reincarnation. Some of these people, I don't know if they even existed, like Pythagoras, the first person I'll talk about, and he is credited as being basically one of the founders of the mystery schools, so take from that what you will. I do think some of our leaders in the world do believe in reincarnation. And I don't know, maybe that's why they're going for immortality, so they don't have to reincarnate here, face their karma or something. But I do think some of these people, I do think, understand reincarnation, but perhaps a lot of them, a lot of the good goyim and the top Jews, I think that they might really think that this is the only life they're going to live, and they are clinging to it desperately. And perhaps that is going to be their downfall. It's definitely leading to a very bad, bad place. This idea that we only live once. So you have to have digital immortality. So we'll talk about all that later. As I said, let's talk about what people of the past thought. Pythagoras first. Souls never die, but always on quitting one abode pass to another. All things change. Nothing perishes. The soul passes hither and thither, occupying now this body, now that. As a wax is stamped with certain figures, then melted, then stamped anew with others, yet it is always the same wax. So the soul, being always the same, yet wears at different times, different forms. So Pythagoras went on to influence Plato, Socrates, and many, many others. And this belief in reincarnation amongst the Greeks was called metempsychosis. Later, the Bhagavad Gita appeared, and I read the quote there about discarding worn-out clothes and putting on new ones. And over there in the East, there was also Taoism. And Chuang Tzu of the 4th century stated, "Birth is not a beginning, death is not an end. There is existence without limitation. There is continuity without a starting point." This Big Bang, it's just a bunch of BS. Okay? Cycles, people. Wheels within wheels. A few centuries later, the famous Emperor Julius Caesar wrote in his De Bello Gallico that the Celts of Europe gained a great deal of strength from their belief in reincarnation. So here's Julius Caesar. "The principal point of their doctrine is that the soul does not die, and that after death it passes from one body into another, a firm belief in the indestructibility of the human soul, which merely passes at death from one tenement to another. For by such doctrine alone, they say, which robs death of all its terrors, can the highest form of human courage be developed." Wow. Think about this. Think about what Julius Caesar was saying about his enemy. That this belief in the transfer of the human soul from one body to another, that this robbed death of all its terrors for the Celts and could form the highest of human courage. They could develop into such courageous warriors, the highest, because of their belief in reincarnation. And I wonder why the Abrahamic people took it from us. The early Christians actually had some beliefs in reincarnation. But Constantine got rid of that. some Kabbalistic Jews actually believe in reincarnation. It's not across the board that Abrahamics 100% do not believe in reincarnation. There are some sects, and even within Islam. Actually, in the Quran, it basically states that reincarnation is real, even though the doctrine of Islam does not endorse that. The Quran states, God generates beings and sends them back over and over again till they return to him. Huh, what does that mean? Basically, reincarnation, no? The Norse did have some stories about reincarnation in their lore. It was mainly relating to this idea of the Hamingja, which translates roughly to luck, which was seen as a personal entity. And a Hamingja would be born often into a descendant, especially if that child is given the name of its ancestor. That's a big, maybe it's a way to call that ancestor into the new being. But that was part of their lore. And it was really only after the Dark Age that Europe began to investigate reincarnation again. And then some of the most influential people were actually convinced of reincarnation as a reality. Leonardo da Vinci, one of those stupid vegans. No, he is actually just a vegetarian, I think. He said, our life is made by the death of others. Well, speaking of meat eating, our life is made by the death. Our life is sustained by the death of others. It doesn't need to be. But yeah, he's basically endorsing reincarnation there. One of the proponents of reincarnation would be the famous Giordano Bruno. And this man was burnt alive at the stake by those loving Christians. Here's his quote on reincarnation. By birth and growth, the spirit architect expands into this mass of which we consist, spreading outwards from the heart. Thither again it withdraws, winding up the threads of its web, returning by the same path along which it advanced, passed out by the same gate through which it entered. Birth is expansion of the center, death contraction to the center. It is the soul that gathers about it, groups and vivifies the mass. The soul is not the body, and it may be in one body or in another, and pass from body to body. There was also Voltaire, who wrote some so-called anti-Semitic works, for sure, even though that quote that's attributed to him about to learn who rules over you does not look to have originated from him. But François Voltaire said, it is no more surprising to be born once than to be born twice. Everything in nature is resurrection. And then you have the Germans. Those evil Germans. Like Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. The soul of man is like to water. From heaven it cometh, and to heaven it riseth, and then returning to earth forever alternating. What about Friedrich Nietzsche? Live so that thou mayest desire to live again. That is thy duty, for in any case thou wilt live again. Live so that thou mayest desire to live again. That is thy duty, for in any case thou wilt live again. That's what I'm trying to say, people. And I understand Friedrich Nietzsche does have some of his issues, some baggage with him, specifically regarding the Jews, actually, and some other things. But I'm not here to critique Nietzsche tonight, and I'm not qualified to do so either. What about Wagner? Wagner. Both of these, actually, all those guys seem to have inspired Hitler quite a bit. Wagner wrote, in contrast to reincarnation and karma, all other views appear petty and narrow. What a great way to put it. Compared to reincarnation and karma, the other views on the subject are petty and narrow. And then you had the Americans. Yeah, the American inventors, like Henry Ford, talking about reincarnation. Henry Ford is another person that had some problems with the Jews. And I have some problems with his problems with the Jews because he caved. And then he was selling Fords over to the Soviet Union. And he apologized. And the Ford Foundation is now committing white genocide. In any event, Ford was intelligent. He wrote, "I am in exact accord with the belief of Thomas Edison that spirit is immortal and that there is a continuing center of character in each personality. But I don't know what spirit is, nor matter either. I suspect they are forms of the same thing. I never could see anything in this reputed antagonism between spirit and matter. To me, this is the most beautiful, the most satisfactory from a scientific standpoint, the most logical theory of life." And it does away with that nihilism. It really does. That destructive purposelessness that people feel. It's plaguing our people. And actually, it was 1918 when the Rosicrucians were kind of exposed in some way. It was the secret doctrine of the Rosicrucians. It was Magus Incognito. And he was revealing the ancient mystery teachings, saying they're alive and well. So here's part of that text. All right. "The doctrine of metempsychosis is one of the oldest of the human race. Traces of the teaching are found in the records of practically every one of the ancient races in all parts of the globe. In one form or another, it has existed in the esoteric circles to be found at the heart of each of the world's great religions, including Christianity. It has always been a cardinal doctrine in the religions of the Orient, and during the past 25 years has attained a wonderful revival of popularity among the thinkers of the Occident. The Rosicrucians' teachings hold that the evolution of man has been accomplished not alone by the general evolutionary trend of the race by which it moves forward from generation to generation, but also by the advance and ascent caused by the improvement in the reincarnating individual soul, each step of rebirth tending upward and onward. As a writer has said, the teachings hold that evolution is caused by the soul striving, struggling, and pressing forward toward fuller and still fuller expression, using matter as a material, and yet always struggling to free itself from the confining and retarding influence of the latter. The struggle results in an unfoldment, causing sheath after sheath of the confining material bonds to be thrown off and discarded, as the spirit molds matter to serve its higher purposes. Evolution is but the process of birth of the imprisoned spirit, unfolding and extricating itself from the web of matter in which it has been involved and enfolded, and the pains and struggles are but incidents of this spiritual parturition. So then let's turn now to the National Socialists of Germany. Why did Heinrich Himmler's SS wear the death's head? Was this just the Jolly Roger skull and bones? No, that does not seem to be the inspiration of it. And you had Himmler, who himself, the head of the SS, he thought he was a reincarnation of King Heinrich, who was an ancient Bavarian king, and that King Heinrich had come back as Heinrich Himmler to fulfill a great mission. Apparently, Himmler actually bought 20,000 copies of Karl Eckhart's Earthly Immortality, German Belief in Reincarnation, in the SIP for his SS. Here's a quote from Heinrich Himmler. A Volk that has this belief in rebirth and that honors its ancestors, and in doing so honors itself, always has children. And this Volk has eternal life. Reincarnation and immortality. Is that not what we strive for here? And it's this belief in rebirth that can take us there. Always having children. The Volk having eternal life. It's what we need. What about Wernher von Braun? The evil paperclip Nazi who just sent rockets up there. And had some quote from the Bible on his tombstone about the celestial dome, the firmament. Weird, right? Wernher von Braun weighs in here on reincarnation. Everything science has taught me strengthens my belief in the continuity of our spiritual existence after death. I believe in an immortal soul. Science has proved that nothing disintegrates into nothingness. Life and soul, therefore, cannot disintegrate into nothingness, and so are immortal. So, if so many smart people over the years have said, hey, Wolf, we only live forever, why is it that YOLO is being crammed down people's throats today? Into their heads, through their ears, through their eyes. With songs, with shops. I see shops that are, YOLO frozen yogurt or something. YOLO fashion. Drake, that half Jewish, half African rapper, had a song, YOLO. He also uses the Bohemian Grove symbol as his symbol. And I think that this whole idea of the end of the world, and even Ragnarok, Armageddon, the fire and brimstone, the inevitable clash, and the fall, and the destruction, it's coming. I think that this is programming, and it has to do with the YOLO mindset. Think about it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The world's going to be destroyed anyway. Jesus is going to come and people are going to die. All you need to worry about is getting right with your God. Okay? You only live once. You got to make sure that you impress Yahweh while you're down here on earth. Or you got to make sure that you are the most absolute degenerate person that you could possibly imagine. Because YOLO. Just enjoy yourself. Doesn't matter. You're not going to have to answer to anybody, including yourself, in the afterlife. You're just going to kind of fade into nothingness. Fade into black like all the Hollywood movies. That's going to be it. And none of this meant anything. So just drink like crazy. Spend a lot of money. I mean, have sex with somebody the same sex. Who cares? Just have a good time. It doesn't matter. Just act a fool. You're going to die soon. Just party hard. Live fast, die young. Only the good die young.
Well, that's because the Jews killed the good. Isn't that right, Billy Joel? Only the good die young, because, well, that's who the Jews kill. Love the Jews. Honor the Jews. Trust the Jews. Thank the Jews. Okay. You also have, as I said, things like transhumanism that are a result of the YOLO mindset. I don't want to let go of this body, of this incarnation. I'd rather live in a digital world. I'll even be disembodied if somehow I could get my brain into a digital world to live forever there. Endless amounts of pornography. Lots of entertainment. Seinfeld into perpetuity. Seinfeld reruns constantly playing in your brain. And you can't die. Wow, that sounds like heaven to me. Oh, man. I really think that they're instilling this mindset for many reasons, and that we need to battle against them to ensure that our people have a future, that our people are able to see themselves in the future, that they are able to understand what reincarnation and immortality is really all about. And just think about it. Do you really want to leave your descendants or yourself potentially in an awful situation in the future? It's going to be way harder to change things, to turn things around then. So you better get used to living like a slave unless you want to be a hero now. I do think that there is some kind of reward for righteous action. I think that living a good life here, now, on this earth, sure, very well could lead towards some greater afterlife, and then, perhaps, a rebirth into a much better world. What if you are so effective with your activism, with just changing a few people's minds, that there's a complete ripple effect, a butterfly effect, that the world eventually changes. All these dominoes fall over, and you know what? We're living in a great place in the future. You can cause that. You can do that by acting here and now. Not by praying to Yahweh, but by actually going out and, it sounds so cliched, but being the change that you want to see. It is contagious. In a good way. I do think so. We have converted a lot of people. We need to convert more. We need to do more. And there will be a reward for it, even if there isn't. Damn, at least people will speak highly of you after you're gone. And you'll live on that way. And the world itself will start to heal. We need this world to heal. Ecologically, mentally, spiritually, biologically, our bodies need to heal. We need to shine our truth in all directions, in the past, in the present, and into the future. We can't damn future generations. Damn it. Reincarnation is the road to heroism. And don't be a coward. Don't sell out your people just for a few more years of life for some shekels. When we're talking about eternity, come on. Or if it's prison time. Oh, 30 years? That sucks. What about 30 billion years, people? What about infinity? Seriously, though, let's put things into that kind of perspective here. I really think it's important. That's why I'm covering it. Death to YOLO. I've got some... You know what I'll do? I'll play some of this audio on the other side of the break. Yeah, that's what I'll do. The Science of Reincarnation. There's an article from Vig on Renegade Tribune. Reincarnation doesn't make sense. I encourage people to go read that. It's a little long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing here. But it's an interesting take on the subject. It's saying that we've been missing some dimensions of our knowledge, let's say. Yeah, so check that out. Reincarnation doesn't make sense. Ravillo P. Oliver had some thoughts on the subject as well. Afterthoughts on afterlife.
However, men came to imagine a survival after death. It is probable that the very oldest form of the notion was a belief that the corpse in the grave retains a certain sentience. That's interesting. A meaningful concept of immortality always includes more than existence after death. No one wants the immortality of, well, a corpse. If there is a divine justice, it must do more than discriminate amongst ghosts and allocate post-mortem residence according to moral criteria. Although the dead in Hades are usually in the form they had at the time of their death, the favored dwellers in Elysium, or the Bite Insulae, seem always to have the bodily form that was theirs at the time of their greatest excellence, the warrior in his prime, regardless of when or how he died. The sage has the maturity of his wisdom, but is exempt from the effects of old age, and a woman who has earned such immortality reverts to the age at which she was most beautiful. It's interesting. Interesting read. You could check that one out. Afterthoughts on Afterlife. Pretty sure that he wrote... Yeah, here we go. The most reasonable theory that offers immortality to all is metempsychosis reincarnation. It avoids all absurdities and the repulsive immortality of such cults as Christianity, and by a doctrine of Carmen, yields the only rational theodicy. It assumes no childish miracles or divine meddling with the immutable laws of nature, but instead presents itself as natural law that operates uniformly throughout the universe as precisely as do the forces that determine gravity, chemical combinations, or optical phenomena. So plausible and reasonable a doctrine, which cannot be shown to be inconsistent with ascertained facts, naturally appeals to our racial mentality. There is the difficulty, of course, that the reincarnated individual does not remember his previous lives, but it is assumed that his subconscious being persists through all his lives, and it is usually provided that he will at some time remember all his previous lives, at least those in human form, when the veil of ignorance drops from his eyes. In many forms of belief in transmigration, one also avoids the embarrassing questions why afterlife is the... perquisite of a limited number of species of anthropoids to the exclusion of mammals, example dogs and horses, that are often morally superior. And most persuasive of all, one can construct for each individual a neat evolutionary sequence from the lowest forms of organic life to the human, from the lower races to the higher, from the morally mediocre to the morally superior, and then onward to superhuman beings who reside perhaps on other planets in the vast universe in which our Earth is but an atom. I don't know about that whole worldview, but... Metempsychosis could be called a psychic Darwinism, the evolution of spiritual species. Interesting. Be back soon.
Have a hard time pronouncing some of the ingredients in your personal care products? Do you even know what those chemicals are? You should. Everything you put onto your body ends up getting into your body, so you better be sure that you are using quality products every day. We know, it's often hard to find really good natural products, and when you find them, they're often very expensive. That's why we have Heathen Herbs. We have affordable herbal tinctures, tooth powder, deodorant, muscle salves, creams, beeswax, cling wrap, gift baskets, magnesium, iodine, throat spray, face spray, hairspray, cleaning spray, bug spray, linen and room spray, and so much more. We're coming out with new products all the time so that you can replace all the corporate crap.
Onda tingite era tutti te in profonda sicura sonda. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. This is Kyle Hunt, and if you'd like to call in and talk about any of these issues, please do. 747-999-6407, again, 747-999-6407. I do have a lot of content I can go through, but I also would be interested in hearing your thoughts on the subject at hand. I was reading from Revillo P. Oliver before, and it was actually getting pretty good here. I'm just going to read two more paragraphs of this. It is possible, of course, to combine the two doctrines, metempsychosis and an Elysium. Now, I skipped over the part where he was talking about Elysium, but I'm pretty sure that you guys know a little bit about this subject. The most beautiful conception of immortality of which I know, and certainly one that, by contrast, shows the utter vulgarity of Christian ideas, is set forth in Pindar's Second Olympian. After three or six lives in which a man has lived with strict justice and perfect integrity, he passes beyond the Tower of Cronus to the fair realm that cannot be reached by land or sea, where gentle breezes from a placid ocean blow forever on the fields of Asphodel. For a description, see Pindar. If the beauty of great poetry can commend a religion, here you have it. A radically different and to us very strange conception of immortality has been evolved by the Jews. Love them, trust them, thank them, praise them. Originally, as is obvious from almost all of the tales in the collection Christians call an Old Testament, their racial god Yahweh, who fought other gods to help them prey on the more civilized nations of the Near East, could do nothing for them at death, and a Jew's ghost went to a ghastly life in death in Sheol, which, of course, is simply the Urkala of the Babylonians, from whom the Jews took all of their cosmogonic myths. This conception, however, attained a fine literary expression in older parts of the diatribe called Ecclesiastes. When the Jews thought of appropriating the monotheism of the Greek Stoics and thus promoting their Yahweh from a tribal deity to the sole god of the entire world, some Jewish sects took from Egyptian and Zoroastrian cults the notion of a last judgment at which the dead, reassembled and repaired, would pop out of their graves, and pious Jews, thus resurrected and reanimated, would be rewarded with a new life on an earth that has been vastly improved by the butchery of most of the goyim and the enslavement of the rest to their divinely appointed masters. This zombie apocalypse sounds amazing! Isn't it funny how they're always talking about, oh, they're dishonoring our dead. You better not dishonor Jewish dead, because they're going to rise from their graves and they'll get you and they'll slaughter you. All this, however, was secondary to the real sense of immortality, which transcends the mythology and is thus felt with equal intensity by the many Jews who are privately or admittedly atheists. As candid Jewish writers explain to us,
A Jew feels himself a part of a superorganism, his race, of which the god is merely a personification. His criterion, therefore, is what is good for the Jewish people. And his immortality is that of the superorganism, of which he is but a small and ephemeral digit. There can be no doubt but that this conception of immortality is innate in the racial mentality, although it escapes the comprehension of our race, for whom an immortality in which the individual, with all of his personal characters, thoughts, and memories, does not survive seems a contradiction in terms. Okay, what I'd like to do now is play a little of this clip from The Science of Reincarnation. The beginning is a kind of good overview of how reincarnation became reintroduced into the West. And I'm not going to play all of this, of course, because it's 17 minutes and 20 seconds long, but you can check it out. I posted it on the Tribune.
Many Eastern religions and New Age traditions believe in some form of physical rebirth or reincarnation, but you don't need faith to think it happens. Over the last 60 years, researchers have documented several thousand cases in which young children recalled the events of a previous life in such detail that those experiences could be confidently matched to recently deceased individuals. Though this evidence has been largely rejected by mainstream science, it compels us to explore new theories of the human mind, and to consider the possibility that consciousness might survive bodily death. Some of the world's oldest religions hold reincarnation, or rebirth, as a fundamental tenet of their beliefs. In all the Indian religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, and Jainism, it is believed that people are fated for an endless cycle of rebirth, as humans, animals, or even plants, according to the tradition, unless they manage to escape. In Hinduism, it is thought that one is reincarnated into better or worse conditions according to one's karma, while other traditions hold that you can plan your next rebirth. Tibetan Buddhism holds that every Dalai Lama since the 15th century has been the same person reincarnated more than a dozen times. Before every death, he instructs his followers on where to find him in his next life. Other cultures outside of East Asia, such as the Tlingit of the Alaskan Panhandle or the Druze of Western Asia, also have a high prevalence of belief in reincarnation, with their own metaphysical assumptions. The idea of rebirth is not nearly as prevalent in the West or in any of the Abrahamic religions. Some Kabbalic Jews profess belief in reincarnation, as have some Christian minority movements, including some early Gnostic sects, the medieval Cathars, and the 17th century Rosicrucians. But most Abrahamic religions hold that following death, the soul passes permanently to the afterlife, an idea that's essential to the doctrines of salvation and the judgment. However, the idea of reincarnation was discussed amongst the Greeks, and entered the Western consciousness when Renaissance thinkers began translating Pythagoras and Plato after the 14th century. In the 19th century, Nietzsche and Schopenhauer commented on the idea of rebirth as presented in the Indian scriptures. From these commentaries, writers like Henry David Thoreau and Walt Whitman helped further popularize the concept, as did the psychologist William James, who introduced it to psychology in the American Society for Psychical Research. At the same time, the occult philosopher Helena Blavatsky incorporated a doctrine of rebirth into theosophy, a forerunner of the New Age movement, and the concept of reincarnation flourished with the rise of spiritualism in the early 20th century. Reincarnation did not come under the scrutiny of Western science until the late 1950s. It began with Ian Stevenson, a Canadian physician and psychiatrist, and after 1957, head of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Virginia. Stevenson had an interest in parapsychology, and in 1960, he authored a review of the published evidence for reincarnation. The article caught the attention of the founder of the Parapsychology Foundation, who gave Stevenson a grant to interview a child in India claiming past life memories. After interviewing the child, He interviewed several others claiming past life memories, then documented several more cases in Sri Lanka, Brazil, Alaska, and Lebanon. On the basis of these interviews, he published the seminal book, 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation, in 1966. This book represented the first time cases of past life memories had been presented as anything other than anecdotes. It introduced the first data on reincarnation. Stevenson's evidence was convincing. In about half of all cases, researchers or family members were able to identify the past life persona, and in many cases, meet with surviving relatives. In some cases, Stevenson interviewed the child and the family before they connected with the past life family, and accompanied them on their first contacts so he could note who and what the children were able to recognize. He was confident that he had nearly ruled out fraud in the vast majority of cases. Every time a past life match was identified, Stevenson was
able to verify. That's enough. You can go watch the rest if you'd like. An interesting history, and the research has continued to this day. But let's actually now go and talk about immortality. Reincarnation and immortality, they're linked. They're linked in some interesting ways, and can be linked in a beautiful way, as Revillo Oliver was saying, with that one idea about living multiple lives and then passing on to a different place, an Elysium. So let's now talk about Egyptian and Celtic ideas of immortality. This came from a 1911 book. It's an excerpt from it. This is from Myths and Legends of the Celtic Race. Now, I do have to give a little bit of a warning. This book is, the author is essentially stating that the Celtic people came from North Africa. But, this could be the case that the Celtic people were first in North Africa, but where were they before that? Before they came to rule in Egypt, where were they? I don't think that the Celtic people are African in origin. Just making that clear. It starts out, this is an excerpt, but it starts out talking about the Ankh on megalithic carvings. There is very strong evidence of the connection of the megalithic people with North Africa. Thus, as Sergei points out, many signs, probably numerical, found on ivory tablets in the cemetery at Nakata, discovered by Flinders Petrie, are to be met with on European dolmens. Several later Egyptian hieroglyphic signs, including the famous Ankh, or Crux Ansata, the symbol of vitality or resurrection, are also found in megalithic carvings. From these correspondences, Letourneau drew the conclusion that the builders of our megalithic monuments came from the south and were related to the races of North Africa. Okay, so the people who built the megaliths in Northern Europe, that they were Africans. I think to say that they came from Egypt would be, or could be, correct. But just a matter of when. And the Celtic people have been all over. Okay? We're not Africans. Maybe we should claim to be the real Africans. Let's do it. Anyway, evidence from language. Approaching the subject from the linguistic side, Rice and Bryn Mawr Jones find that the African origin, at least proximately, of the primitive population of Great Britain and Ireland is strongly suggested. It is here shown that the Celtic languages preserve in their syntax the Hamitic and especially the Egyptian type. Morris Jones, the... Oh, okay, that's just a reference. Egyptian and Celtic ideas of immortality. Okay, here we go. The facts at present known do not, I think, justify us in framing any theory as to the actual historic relation of the dolmen builders of Western European
people with the people who created the wonderful religion and civilization of ancient Egypt. But when we consider all the lines of evidence that converge in this direction, it seems clear that there was such a relation. Egypt was the classic land of religious symbolism. It gave to Europe the most beautiful and most popular of all its religious symbols, that of the divine mother and child. I believe that it also gave to the primitive inhabitants of Western Europe the profound symbol of the voyaging spirits guided to the world of the dead by the god of light. The religion of Egypt, above that of any people whose ideas we know to have been developed in times so ancient, centered on the doctrine of a future life. The palatial and stupendous tombs, the elaborate ritual, the imposing mythology. I don't know if this guy, just an aside, I don't know if this guy actually thought that the pyramids were tombs back in, 1918, but they're not. Contrary to what you've heard, the pyramids were never intended to be tombs. So anyway, the imposing mythology, the immense exaltation of the priestly caste, all these features of Egyptian culture were intimately connected with their doctrine of the immortality of the soul. To the Egyptian, the disembodied soul was no shadowy simulacrum, as the classical nations believed the future life was a mere prolongation of the present. The just man, when he had won his place in it, found himself among his relatives, his friends, his work people, with tasks and enjoyments very much like those of earth. The doom of the wicked was annihilation. He fell a victim to the invisible monster called the Eater of the Dead. Now, when the classical nations first began to take an interest in the ideas of the Celts, the thing that principally struck them was the Celtic belief in immortality, which the Gauls said was handed down by the Druids. The classical nations believed in immortality, but what a picture does Homer, the Bible of the Greeks, give the lost, degraded, dehumanized creatures, which represented the departed souls of men. Take as one example the description of the spirits of the suitors slain by Odysseus as Hermes conducts them to the underworld. We're going to really read this. All right, yeah, let's get this conception of the underworld. Now were summoned the souls of the dead by Selenian Hermes. Touched by the wand, they awoke and obeyed him and followed him, squealing, even as bats in the dark, mysterious depths of a cavern, squeal as they flutter around, should one from the cluster be fallen, where from the rock suspended they hung, all clinging together, so did the souls flock squealing behind him as Hermes the Helper guided them down to the gloom through dank and moldering pathways. That was the spirits of the suitors slain by Odysseus. Yes, like bats fluttering around, going down to the gloom through the dank and moldering pathways. It seems like the Christian conception, well, the New Testament was written in Greek, wasn't it? I don't like a lot of things about Greek and Roman gods. Even though I know that they were white, they were many of the ancient Greeks were essentially Nordic or Celtic at the time. I know that the Celts did conquer the Greeks for a time and the Romans, but the Romans and the Greeks at that time were very white. They changed in composition over the years. In any event, something doesn't resonate with me about some of the more Mediterranean ideas. Maybe it's just what's in my blood. I don't know. In any event, the classical writers felt rightly that the Celtic idea of immortality was something altogether different from this. That gloom through dank and moldering pathways. It was both loftier and more realistic. It implied a true persistence of the living man, as he was at present in all his human relations.
They noted with surprise that the Celt would lend money on a promissory note for repayment in the next world. And other classical writers mention this practice. Oh, never mind. This is also an absolutely Egyptian conception, and this very analogy occurred to Diodorus in writing of the Celtic idea of immortality. It was like nothing that he knew of out of Egypt. The doctrine of transmigration. I think this is very interesting. Many ancient writers assert that the Celtic idea of immortality embodied the Oriental conception of the transmigration of souls. And to account for this, the hypothesis was invented that they had learned the doctrine from Pythagoras, who represented it in classical antiquity. Thus, Caesar said that, so he's just talking about the Druids' conception of immortality. We've gone over that. And skip those quotes. I think you get the picture here. Now, traces of this doctrine certainly do appear in Irish legend. Thus, the Irish chieftain, Mongan, who is an historical personage and whose death is recorded about 625 AD, is said to have made a wager as to the place of death of a king named Fothad, slain in a battle with the mythical hero Finn Mac Cumhall. In the 3rd century, he proves his case by summoning to his aid a revenant from the other world, Kilta, who is the actual slayer of Fothad, and who describes correctly where the tomb is to be found and what were its contents. Okay. Some weird stuff here. This is a little bit wrong, but... a little bit long. Trying to see what I want to read from this, if anything more. However, it may have been conceived, it is certain that the belief in immortality was the basis of Celtic Druidism. The etymology of the word Druid is no longer an unsolved problem. It has been suggested that the latter part of the word might be connected with the Aryan root vid, which appears in wisdom. In the Latin videre. So-and-so has now shown that this root, in combination with the intensive practical particle drew, would yield the word druvid, represented in Gaelic by drawi, a druid, just as another intensive su with vids yields the Gaelic sage. It's linguistic connections here. Caesar affirms this distinctly and declares the doctrine to have been fostered by the Druids rather for the promotion of courage than for purely religious reasons. An intense other world faith, such as that held by the Celts, is certainly one of the mightiest of agencies in the hands of a priesthood who holds the keys of that world. Now, Druidism existed in the British Islands, in Gaul, and in fact, so far as we know, wherever there was a Celtic race amid a population of dolmen builders. There were Celts in Gaul, someplace in Gaul, but we're... I'm not going to continue with that. So, it's interesting for me to look into some of the beliefs of the past and try to take from them what is useful for us today. But we don't need to just look to the past or just look to the Havamal, right? There's a classic line in the Havamal about kinsmen die. Here we go. Cattle die, kindred die, every man is mortal, but the good name never dies of one who has done well. Cattle die, kindred die, every man is mortal, but I know of one thing that never dies, the glory of the great dead. That's a form of immortality. And a lot of people take this just to mean that someone's name lives on. People remember the heroic deeds of heroes. And that is true. Many of these heroes are remembered. Many are not. Many people die and they're not remembered. Think of all of the people who've died and their names are not remembered. Did they not gain immortality? If that's
if that's the only way we're thinking of this, I would say that that's incorrect. And I think that we might only be able to successfully reincarnate in our own bloodlines, or something that's close to, is able to handle the soul of an awakened Aryan, let's say. An awakened Aryan, I don't think, could successfully reincarnate into, let's say, an African, young African Bushman. I don't think so. And so that's why it's really essential for us to ensure that our people exist as well, that we might continue to live on. We only live forever if we are still wolves, if we're not sheep, if we're not part of the flock. So that's, I'm waging war against YOLO. That's what's going on here. And it's interesting how so many people are, who would rather have that kind of fame of their name rather than the immortality of the folk. And I was actually just thinking about Achilles as well, with Achilles choosing to have that famous name even though he knew he was going to die. Yeah, sure, there's something heroic about that. But I think he should have stayed home and not fought in someone else's war, and had a family, and had his children remember him, and their children remember him. And yeah, maybe at one point he was forgotten. What purpose did he serve? He served the purpose of his enemies, going and dying, fighting for them. I don't know, I just think that's kind of selfish act on Achilles' part. Who am I to say, though? That's one form of immortality that I don't really find all that appealing. That the people who still live in this world might remember my name and think that I was really good in battle. That's not that important to me. Stay tuned, last half hour's going up.
Wrong. Is it the military-industrial complex?
Wrong.
Is it the Illuminati?
Wrong.
Is it the Freemasons?
Wrong.
Jesuits, Vatican, Satanists?
Wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
I don't know then. I mentioned all of them whom they talk in the media about.
Do you want to know who is it?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Then listen to the most honest...
Stop. I want to know now.
It's the Jews. It's always been the Jews. Learn more at the hard-hitting talk radio, Renegade Broadcasting.
Thank you.
welcome back to the Solar Storm. Sorry to get bogged down in some reading there. I get a little bored of it myself sometimes. Unfortunately, my dog ate my homework. No, I don't have a dog. My notes didn't get saved. It's not like I had extensive notes, but I thought I had something here before the show. I've been out all day, and I didn't really get a chance to properly prepare for tonight. And I go look for it, 15 minutes before the show, and it was just gone. So I've been trying to get this show back together on the fly. And thank you for sticking with me here. I appreciate that. I really do. So before the break, I was talking about Achilles and his fate. And his Achilles heel. You know, he was basically immortal in that he could not be damaged except for his heel, because, you know, he was dipped in that river and it made him impervious. I mean, how heroic is that, though? Not to trash talk Achilles here, okay? I don't want Achilles coming back from the dead and killing me. Achilles. Destroy. I don't know. These old tales are interesting. In any event, I don't think that's that heroic. I mean, this guy was able to go kill a bunch of people. Yeah, he was a great warrior. He was also invincible. couldn't be killed except for through his heel. And I don't think anybody knew that. So nobody went for his heel. Just need to be heel hooked. Now let's just play this clip. Instead of me reading, I'll just play this scene from that stupid movie with Brad Pitt. Achilles. Troy. Yeah, that was the movie, right? Troy. With Eric Bana. And that Jewish Orlando Bloom as Paris. Alright, let's try to find this here. Try to fast forward. There we go.
Come. They want you to fight in Troy. I'm making you another seashell necklace. Like the ones I used to make you when you were a boy. Do you remember?
Mother. Tonight I decide.
If you stay in Larissa, you will find peace. You'll find a wonderful woman. You'll have sons and daughters, and they will have children. And they will love you. And when you're gone, they will remember you. But when your children are dead, and their children after them, your name will be lost. If you go to Troy, glory will be yours. They will write stories about your victories for thousands of years. The world will remember your name.
Jews will make movies about you.
Go to Troy. No, you will never come home. For your glory walks hand in hand with your doom. And I shall never see you.
Dramatic look from Brad Pitt.
Alright. There you go. That's pretty close to the original text, if I remember correctly. Not exactly, but the gist is there. Let's talk about another kind of immortality that is just so sick. I briefly mentioned it with the transhumanism. It's called digital immortality. It's so sick. Here's a quote from Aaron Donahue. Integrating your nervous system into a computer matrix like the internet, everybody's linked up, and eventually you'll be able to transfer your consciousness through understanding and being in the matrix itself most of the time. You'll be able to holographically project your life in the matrix, and that's the slippery slope. And that's where we lose ourselves. It's a hellish environment, and they're begging to die. It's better to step into the infinity and become extinct
than to eternally exist in this computer matrix.
Okay.
Ready Player One. Let's see. Yeah, Steven Spielberg, the Jew.
Sure doesn't seem.
It's this whole living in the virtual reality, being in the immersive internet environment, because you live in the Stack'em and Pack'em Agenda 2030, whatever it is now, environment. These big super cities, smart cities. Oh, yeah, you could be immortal. I think Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise was kind of about this, too. It's kind of idea of digital immortality. Oh, they'll be able to fix him up, and they'll be able to cure him sometime in the future. So they're going to put him in some kind of a frozen state of animation. I don't know. It's a concept that people have been talking about for quite some time. It goes hand in hand with transhumanism. And when you think about the nanobot technology too, how terrible would that be if you were infected with nanobots that were essentially there to keep you alive whether or not you wanted them to? Kind of, like the Spawn. What is that? It's not Spawn. Kind of like Spawn, that stupid character. Venom. Like Venom. You know how it's able to or Terminator, that T-1000. You know what I'm talking about? I think actually one of the later Terminators also had this kind of nanobot-type Terminator. Not liquid metal, nanobot. Big difference. So that's actually probably not too far off. Nanobots going in and repairing your cells, or that you essentially become a cybernetic creature, that you're fused with these little nanobots, nanodust. You'll be a cyborg whether or not you want to be. And then, of course, they'd be able to kill you in an instant. They probably would be able to do that anyway if they really wanted to, but you get what I'm saying. It's just not a future that I want to be a part of. That'd be terrible, being forced to live forever. I mean, in this world, to not die ever. Especially if it's a Jewish hell. I think that there's something very important about death. I don't think that immortality, this vampire ideal, is something that we should strive for. We don't want to embrace death, be a culture of death, but we cannot fear death. Fear is the path of the dark side. No, death is the path to rebirth. I think we'd become very stale if we did not die. Things are meant to eventually die. That's just the way of this world, whether you like it or not. And when this world is in a good state, good healthy state, that life is often quite long and quite good. Think about the life of a great huge tree, like some of the ones that were out there in California before people came in. And they didn't chop down the trees. What they actually did with some of these massive trees that they had out there, is they shaved off all the bark and used them for shingles. Yeah. And then the trees died because the trees had been skinned alive. Oh, what is done to trees? That's a travesty. And I'm being very serious. These ancient trees. Also, just think about some of the ancient tortoises and how humans might have once lived long, long lives. But the atmosphere might have been very different back then. With more trees in this world, I do think that we'd have a much, much longer lifespan. Not just all the clean air, right? Just the massive amounts of oxygen that we'd be breathing. The whole world would be different. Oh, what they're doing just to create more cattle fields. Seriously, guys. Seriously, this meat-eating thing, it's killing the lungs of the world. I don't care about how Al Gore lied. He did.
allegories of fraud, these climate change, fear-mongering pieces of crap, I don't trust them one bit. But that doesn't mean I want my world to be polluted. And it doesn't mean that I want to see massive amounts of forest clear-cut to make way for cattle grazing in South America or wherever. The deforestation of this planet is awful. They really did pave paradise and put up a parking lot. I don't want to be reborn into this world. I don't want to be reborn into a world just of parking lots and strip malls. Just pavement everywhere. I don't. Call me a greenie, an eco-fascist, whatever. Whatever. I'm a hippie. I'm a hippie because I don't like all the Aryan destruction. Destruction of the natural resources. Raping the world. They think that's so cool, so base, so fashy. Some of them really do. What are you, a lefty? You a liberal? Caring about animals and plants and stupid stuff like that? We gotta have more human capital. We gotta feed them well. They gotta be able to enjoy themselves here. Get healthy, have a steak or two. Or three. Or 6 million. It's terrible. We need to change this world. Change it drastically. I love this song. I do. You know, we could actually... Sinead needs to do it.
The paved paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Paved paradise, put up a synagogue. Sinead's just done a short little recording of that. And that was about it. But it's a good song. And I feel that way so much. And listen, I know that there's still vast tracts of land. But so much has been polluted. It's hard to live in this world that is getting sprayed daily. To try to enjoy yourself. I see the potential beauty in this world. I do not see the current beauty. It's all covered over with a haze. It's struggling. It's struggling to breathe. The beauty of this world is getting choked out. We can't let that happen. We've got to choke out the enemies of beauty, of life. And I really see a purpose for us being here. A lot of people don't have a purpose in this life. And I think once you find a purpose, you can be very driven and make huge, massive changes and earn yourself a sense of immortality. Whatever that may be for you, whether it's just people remembering your name, having a family, passing on your genetics, continuing the flow, securing a future. Or who knows, maybe you'll go on and be a ghost like Anakin Skywalker in the Star Wars thing or whatever. Obi-Wan. maybe that's the kind of immortality that can be achieved. I know it's a Jewish movie, I'm just saying. That's kind of similar to some of the Aryan ideologies of the past. That kind of version of the afterlife, just being kind of glorified ghost. And not to say I don't believe in ghosts. I used to love ghost stories, I'll tell you that, but I don't see any reason why a spirit of a deceased person might not
be able to continue in this realm, to influence things in subtle ways. I think that it seems actually pretty reasonable to me. A lot of our ancestors believed in ghosts. It made some sense. How can we kind of do that whole Aragorn thing where he goes and gets that ghost army? The army of the dead to go wash over his enemies. Can we do that? Can we summon? No, I'm not getting into this territory. We're not going to summon the dead. Stop thinking crazy, Kyle. You do not want those Jews to crawl out of their graves for the end times to rule over you. Do not summon the dead. Okay, not going to go down that pathway. At least not yet. At least not yet. Even if it would win us the war, I will not resort to that yet. Okay, so we've got just a little bit of time left. If you do want to call in, please do. I've got articles I could read. I'm just trying not to read too much. Yeah, this digital immortality thing, pretty freaking strange. You could search for it on Renegade Tribune. There was an article that was put up by somebody there. And people just feel so lost. They feel so materialistic that they're perfectly fine thinking that... Wasn't there a guy even killed himself so that he could exist digitally? That's kind of what that movie... What was that? Transcendence with Johnny Depp was all about. This guy becoming immortal with nanotech or transferring his consciousness to AI and then the AI rebuilds his body with nanotech and... Oh, it's just stupid crap. And then they... Yeah, because they spray chemtrails everywhere, the nanotech then and everything, if you really are paying attention to what the movie's all about, not the kind of immortality I'm going for. I don't want to be a cyborg. That's what I'm getting at. But I have said before in the past, if for some reason I needed to replace a limb, doesn't mean I'd have to be like Darth Vader. In the Celtic myths, this was actually done. It was, Nuada. Nuada was the guy who lost his hand, couldn't be king anymore. So they fashioned him a new hand, and then he was able to rule again. Yeah, you couldn't be a one-hand ruler. Just wasn't going to work. It's part of the laws of the land. So... Yeah, if I had to get a bionic arm, I would for you, for the sake of you all, so I could win this war. Damn it. I don't want to be a cyborg, people. Don't want to be a cyborg, and I don't want to summon the dead. So you better call in so I stop getting stupid ideas. All right, what I'll do is read. Yeah. I'll read because I was unprepared because my notes didn't save. I will read some more so I don't get any more silly ideas in my head to become a cyborg and summon the dead. What is that? Full Metal Alchemist? Isn't that actually something like the plot of that? I wrote an article, True Immortality. You can read that one. This one's called Immortality by Elsie Christensen. I republished this on Renegade Tribune, but it was from... Scroll. 1982, a year before I was born. Excuse me, a year before I was reborn. Thank you. Why does the idea of life after death have such an appeal? How come that notion of a heaven is so important that this factor alone is one of the main reasons so many of our kinfolk cling to Christianity? We have no proof at all that such a place exists. The stories about people who have come back from the dead do not constitute any proper evidence simply because they did not die. They were only on the threshold of death, but did not step over. One answer is obvious. To each person, he is the most important individual on earth. The survival instinct, self-preservation, is the strongest of all of our urges. It would therefore be human to wish that this important person, the marvelous me, should at least in part be preserved somewhere and not altogether disappear from the face of the earth. Another answer would be that many people live rather miserable lives. Maybe for some it is because they have not been taught to honor the proper values. For others, they may have been born into slavery or wretched circumstances they cannot change by themselves. For both, it is understandable they dream of a better life somewhere, sometime. And if it is impossible in this life, they invent a next existence where all things wonderful will happen. We cannot blame people for such longings. Maybe this hope of someday balancing the scales is the only thing that keeps them going. A spiritually empty life or physical distress are powerful motivations for believing in a fantasy island. But it is not factual. For our forefathers had a different outlook. First of all, they believed in destiny. That means that you live through the life the Norns had planned for you. The concept is not fatalistic, for you are free to work with or against your destiny. If you follow your destined course in life, you are listening to your instincts, and events will form a natural pattern. You may die young, face dangers, or go through hardships, or you may be destined to raise a fine family. Whatever it is, you are living in harmony with the gods. Contrarywise, you may disregard what your instincts tell you. You may take the easy way out, be dishonest with yourself and others, sell out, and your life will be wasted. You will leave nothing of value behind. In Religious Attitudes of the Indo-Europeans, Professor Hans Gunther states that Indo-European religiosity is of this world, and this fact determines its essential forms of expression, and that includes the ideas about death and immortality. To our Nordic forefathers, death was as natural as birth. We dealt with this particular aspect in such and such. It is part of the life cycle, and nobody expected it to be any different. The sagas tell us that those who died a natural death went to the kingdom of the dead, presided over by the daughter of Loki by the name Hel. It's not a place of punishment. One could almost be tempted to call it a storehouse. Our forefathers were not as scientifically informed as we are. Yet we were aware that matter does not disappear, it only changes form. So in their simple ways, they realized that the extinguished life forces of the deceased had to be retained somewhere, and they devised the kingdom of hell. At the Battle of Ragnarok, the souls of the dead would be released, for which purpose is not quite clear, but apparently to influence the outcome of the debacle. So if I sound the horn of Heimdall, would I be able to summon the dead? The Norse dead? Is that how I do it? Okay, people. We're getting somewhere. Okay. At the Battle of Ragnarok, the souls of the dead would be released. Okay. However, the sagas tell that Baldur, who was killed by his twin brother, Hodor, through the treachery of Loki, comes up from hell, as these two sons of Wotan are destined to be part of the next group of gods that will help mankind keep order in the new and better world that will arise after the big battle. So I think that's one of the ways that this Nordic conception of Ragnarok differs with the Battle of Armageddon. If you look at the Battle of Armageddon, things get really bad for a long, long time after that. You know, the apocalypse, not very good. With the Battle of Ragnarok, some of these old gods, and they were kept young by eating the apples of Eden, I mean Idun, they were living a long time. Maybe they just needed to die so that they, by their old enemies, so that they could be reborn. And the world does get better. The great battle essentially seems to eliminate the great evil forces of the world. Things are much better on the other side. The gods sacrifice themselves, annihilating themselves so as to destroy their enemies. Thor with Jormungandr and Odin with the Fenris wolf. And who was it? Who takes out Surtur? I don't know. I'm not going to continue with this. Oh, actually, one little part. You might ask, what's the difference then between Valhalla and Heaven? The obvious difference is that the warriors in Valhalla, fighting together with the gods at Ragnarok, are doing so in the service of the folk, to create a better world. The Christian idea of the joys of Heaven are for the benefit of the individual. He will hear the harps play. He is to sit at the left hand of God, clad in his white sheets, etc., etc. There is no thought of helping others. It is very limited, personal purpose. To our forefathers, life as well as death were tribal matters. Yeah, very interesting. Now, I do think that it's pretty ridiculous that everybody talks about Valhalla and nobody seems to mention Folkvanger, which is Freya's Hall. I do think that there is a conspiracy. It's obviously the gynocracy at work. The gynocracy. They're hidden. It's the hidden gynocracy. That's why nobody talks about Folkvanger. No, I mean, it's just so interesting. The first choice goes to Freya, and everybody's looking to get on the B team and be picked up by Odin in Valhalla. I want to be on the A team, people. So hopefully my little hastily put together show here tonight has earned me some points in Freya's book, so I get picked for the A-team after the Valkyries carry me away and we are successful. And then, of course, I'll be reborn a few times. Go off to Elysium. Everything will be great. Hey, thanks so much for listening here tonight. I hope that you have gained something from this show, and do consider the topics of reincarnation and immortality, and think about how this could possibly influence your actions here in this world. We need to make this world a better world, not seek to just abandon it and fly off to heaven. Thanks to the supporters. It is very much appreciated. I'll talk to you all again soon. Stay tuned to the network.
On behalf of the WHO, the World Health Organization, it has come to our attention that various neo-Nazi groups are trying to promote natural, healthy, alternative products to white people. The Rockefeller Foundation didn't spend billions of dollars in creating the synthetic and safe medical and pharmaceutical industries, so some far-right startup like heathenherbs.com, to name but one, can now destroy over 100 years of testing on humans and other animals. Your painful death today helps us treat black, brown and yellow children tomorrow. Thank you.